Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly.
Big trucks.
Big trucks, yeah. Sorry. Well, it's appropriate. It's Colonial Marines for the Alien RPG. Uh-huh. And they're heavy troop carriers, I'm sure, sound just like that. And Quest RPG does an actual play tutorial series.
Okay. Mm.
And I thought we would discuss, not sure the best way to put this, but the preciousness of player characters. You know, the kind of over-attachment maybe a player has to a character that they created.
Yep.
So, well, let's start off with, look at my knees.
I can't. The table's open. Okay.
What kind of knees are these? Chinese.
Where does that come from?
That got the Monster Hunter film taken out of theaters in China.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I guess one's clear. Yeah.
Didn't even know there was a Monster Hunter film.
Right.
Actually, no. You know what? I did know. Mm-hmm. I didn't care.
Right.
Which is a shame because I like that game franchise.
Yeah. So I guess the theaters are doing just fine in China. So they're packed with customers. And there was a translation. No one's quite clear on exactly what it is, but it seems like they wanted those lines taken out. There's a Chinese rapper, I guess, and in this American production, probably funded by China. But had this line, and they're not sure what the translation may have caused, but people are saying it's offensive, it's racist for some reason. And the only kind of explanation that I saw online is somebody said that there's a Chinese kind of proverb or saying that there's gold behind a man's knees, and so you don't kneel except to your mother or to God. So it's a very old kind of saying, and there may have been some kind of reference to that in the subtitles of that.
Okay.
But so they took it out of theaters, cut out that line, and I guess it's back. But
I didn't even know it had hit theaters. I thought this was still in development.
Yeah, next year in America, I think.
Oh, okay. So it went to China first.
Right. Okay. Yeah, like everything will from now on. Actually, to go into a movie theater, I think you're going to have to be in Asia from now on. It's going to...
Oh, well.
Yeah. But... Well, no segue. Colonial Marines. So that
was... Yeah, no segue. Yeah.
That was the focus of the latest cinematic adventure for the Alien RPG.
Destroyer Worlds.
Destroyer of Worlds, right.
Which I pre-ordered along with the starter box just because I liked the game so much and kind of wanted to support Free Allegan. It's unfortunately back in the States. Mm-hmm. I have all the PDFs and everything and have read through it. And shipping being what it is, I'm reluctant to ask my family to send me those boxes because they're boxes.
Yeah, right. They're both box sets. Yeah, that's right. So we'll see. But they're kind of leaning into, because I think, you know, fans of Aliens are really looking forward to that aspect of the game. And so they're going to do a Colonial Marines Operations Manual. Yeah. So similar to what Modiphius is doing with Star Trek, they're kind of releasing books like they have the Klingon. You know, they did the Quadrants and then they did the Klingon Empire to kind of add that aspect to the game. So this will be a whole guide focusing on the Space Marines, and it's...
Oh, can you say that?
Oh, sorry. Oh. It's on Colonial Marines.
It's all Colonial Marines also. Let's not get taken down by GW. Please don't take us down. We actually buy your stuff. Look at that.
That's right. It's Colonial Marines. That's right. Yeah, that's an easy slip to make. But so it sounds kind of interesting. It looks kind of affordable. I'm not sure what the page count is going to be, but it's about $40
US. Really? Okay.
$39.99. Yeah. So not too bad. And so what it includes is history and organization inside the Colonial Marines, creating the Marines, so character generation. Right. Weapons and vehicles, maybe specific to Colonial Marines, and maybe the corps that support them. Factions on the frontier, so the powers behind and their dark agendas. Marine missions, so six missions included in the book that are playable in any order, so they're not linked. And then end game, so a showdown against a deadly enemy finally revealed.
Oh, interesting. So kind of like a cinematic teaser, kind of similar to what we got in the core book of Hope's Last Stand, do you think?
Maybe. Yeah. No, that's probably something like that. Yeah. Yeah, and I wonder if the missions would probably be cinematic, or I guess it depends, the campaigns. If you're creating characters, though, it can't be cinematic.
No, I mean, it could, but you would have to come up with personal agendas to pick from, something like that. No.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's some kind of like mission generator, because in the Alien core book, the focus was largely on kind of the space truckers, where they had all these tables and stuff, charts to like generate planets and jobs and kind of places you were going and things you were doing and problems on the worlds or places you were dropping off cargo.
Mm-hmm.
None of them really alien related, but mm-hmm. I mean, that whole thing about every mission can't be
right
encountering xenomorphs.
Right.
But you gotta encounter them sometime.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised and kind of am hopeful that they put a marine mission generator
mm-hmm.
kind of pages in there.
That's good. Yeah, and so just like the cinematic adventures, Andrew E.C. Gasca is working on the stories as well as Paul Elliott. So they it's going to also include the awesome Martin Grip artwork that we saw from the core book onwards. So so they're going to continue that look. And that's a good product. And so this might be a nice way to expand and give some people kind of what they would go to the Alien universe for.
Yeah, because we got Marines in the core book.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have like one Marine character or one Marine template and then like a Marshall mm-hmm. character? But
right.
I'd like to see, I guess, additional talents and stuff like that to make your Marines different.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
For me, the Marines are kind of like the least interesting part, despite liking the movie Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that playing like a horror game, eventually you maybe want to like move to action, or there are people right. who prefer like the action horror stuff where it's like, okay, we can kind of go toe-to-toe
mm-hmm.
with the aliens rather than having to cobble together flamethrowers from spare parts on our ship.
Right. Yeah, and also like with those like hidden agendas, they're not very good colonial Marines if they're all like working against each other and have their own personal personal plans.
I not going to spoil anything for Destroyer Worlds, but I think there was still a nice selection of personal agendas mm-hmm. in the Destroyer of Worlds campaign.
Okay.
And like we said previous times, those personal agendas encourage the player to have their character do things that create tension and are also appropriate to the horror movie genre.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder, with a campaign, you're probably going to get a tight knit group of Marines as opposed to, in the cinematic where people are kind of working against each other and trying to like, kind of raise the stakes and kind of climax a story. So, yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. And that should be,
I think fun. Pre-order might be actually, I'm not sure when pre-order starts. Maybe it will have started by the time this goes out. Maybe not.
Oh, yeah.
I'll probably pre-order it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good bet. Yeah, I can't wait to see it, and especially the Destroyer of Worlds too. I'm looking forward to that as well.
I think that's supposed to be what, like 3 or 4 sessions worth.
Oh yeah,
depending how much banter. So like 8 for our group.
Yeah, right. Huh? It'll be a couple months.
Yeah.
Right. And Quest RPG is back in the news.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw that they're talking about. They're hyping, they're promoting a series that they're working on. And this seems to be, I guess it's a good approach. Like if you're trying to be an entryway, a kind of gateway and easy, and you're even marketing to schools and teachers and stuff, this is a good way to do it. So they're going to do an actual play series that's going to be more tutorial. So it's more like a narrated how-to format. But also using voice actors, similar to kind of Critical Role.
Okay.
So trying to, so showing the character, making it entertaining and showing the characters kind of do their thing, but explaining how that works in the system so you can do this yourself.
So do you think, I mean, I'm sure it's just details or, kind of sparse details at this point, but do you think it's going to be more of people playing the game
mm-hmm.
with them intentionally narrating mechanics?
Oh, maybe, yeah. Or maybe, yeah, like the GM might be specifically saying, like, kind of foregrounding the system as opposed to Critical Role's kind of backgrounding it. So, just kind of saying, okay, roll a d6, for that sword and do, they'll kind of maybe go through the steps so that you're hearing the repetition of it. Maybe it won't be very entertaining. It's definitely more educational than entertaining, but you'll hear the repetition of it. It's like, okay, now I understand what combat is because I heard them do, 6 rounds of it.
Right.
So. it makes sense. So what they're saying is, from the beginning, we hope to design Quest in a way that welcomes everyone, especially those who have never played a tabletop role-playing game before. So an audio version seemed like a natural next step to making the basics of the game more accessible. So I guess it's an audio.
Okay.
When I'm thinking actual play, I'm seeing video. But yeah, there's a lot of actual play podcasts, so this is going to be an audio series. So that's also why it's good to have voice actors. So it's easy to listen to people's voices are actually right. not too...
And to differentiate between different characters since you don't have the visuals, yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, so they say, succinct 30-minute episodes and aimed at an audience for whom the physical rulebook wasn't an option. Oh, so that's interesting. Yeah. So like an audio tutorial. And so we'll see if this like makes them more competitive or kind of, you know, forefronts them as far as making this system another option.
Interesting. Well, I wonder if it would make them more competitive only because it sounds like they're trying to do something different from what D&D would do, where if they are intentionally targeting, that sounds kind of negative, but if they're intentionally gearing their stuff towards like...
They're grooming?
I was not going to go that far. If they're, especially what I'm going to say next, like if they're packaging this for kids or for educators,
right?
That's something that I think D&D is not doing.
Right.
So I don't know if they would have to be competitive, just be different where, you know, we're going this direction.
Right.
And maybe that's why they're doing audio only. I think that makes it a bit more attractive for schools, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe, I'm not sure. But definitely vision impaired people.
Right.
Where, like
right.
I said, the physical rule book is not an option. So you're going to learn to play the game through audio.
Yeah.
So more accessible.
Yeah. I wonder how successful that will be. But, and it might be kind of the, you know, targeting educators and schools and things is kind of the Apple Macintosh approach. Yeah. So they in the 90s kind of like set up computer labs for every school they could get their hands on.
I remember going to them.
Right. And you graduate with, I know how to use a Mac. And every job you're looking at is Windows.
Wow.
So that was a real fun experience. But but that seems to be, it works. So that may be their idea.
No, I was wondering because I've started listening to, because I can't watch at work, listening to some APs.
Mm-hmm.
And like we discussed before, the main reason I consume APs is to learn a system or to see a system being used. And I've had some kind of bad luck trying to find APs where it seems like a lot of them that I've found out are people who want to practice their voice acting skills.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, that's fine, that's great. We are playing a role-playing game. It's important for you to kind of be your character. And, you know, like we said, hiring voice actors to differentiate characters is something you want to do. It's not really why I consume. Like, if you're going to go right. like an hour or two before the rules kick in, that's not interesting for me. Because why are you playing that system then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I want to see that system be highlighted. And yeah.
Yeah. Or just do something completely improvisational.
Yeah. Which is fine. Mm-hmm. Like if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. That's kind of a system in and of itself.
Right.
Use it.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. So what would you rather listen to? An actual play where they're kind of talking through the system and you're hearing what people are rolling and why, or just a straight mechanics kind of breakdown by someone that is kind of reviewing the system?
Both, because I would want different things out of that.
Oh, okay.
Like, if I'm looking for just a review of the system, then a person just narrating a review of the system would be fine. Mm-hmm. If I actually want to see the game being played,
right.
then give me kind of like a normal tabletop style game where people are playing. And yes, that might mean side conversations and stuff and, you know, try and ignore that or cut that out as much as possible, but it's going to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the other end of the spectrum is radio dramas.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Where it's the mechanics are cut out pretty much entirely, apart from maybe like die roll sounds every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to do it that way, that's fine too, because I expect different things right. from that. One of the ones that I've been watching recently, which, hey, of course, is Cortex Prime, is the Roll and Keep, R-O-L-E and Keep. And they're just playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
They're not intentionally walking people through it, but there are some people who are new to that system in that group.
Yeah.
And so the GM would be like, okay, here's what you want to do, this and this and this and this.
Right, right.
And just by listening to that, you can understand how to play.
Hmm. So. Well, that's good. Yeah, so it continues. The people utilizing actual plays as for various purposes, whether they're good or not, continues.
I have yet to encounter an AP that's done for nefarious purposes.
Well, I don't know. I think there's a few out there.
Disney hasn't gotten into them yet.
Yeah, right, right. Oof, yeah, that's coming. Yeah. But they claim they're for charity, so that's okay. For a little bit of discussion. So we had our kind of most recent Swords and Wizardry session. Went pretty rough.
Oh.
And so I was thinking a little bit about kind of the current situation. So, yeah, so a lot of people ended up either imprisoned or almost dead. And,
okay.
Yeah, kind of invisibly limping out of a dungeon or a temple. And it had me thinking about kind of the preciousness and how it seems to be more of a trend recently. And there's a little bit of a complaint about how much people want to put into their backstory and how much they're kind of stepping on the DM's toes as far as his world building and you trying to put your, you know, crazy mythology or whatever.
Right, okay.
So I was thinking about the things that are kind of pushing people to be too precious with their characters and not being able to easily accept where they're going to die. And this is a pretty hazardous job they've chosen to do, going into a dungeon and killing things for riches.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't have much of a future. Like the only way you survive that is retire young. You know, that's the best way. Build your stronghold and
that kind of game.
Send your grandchildren out to.
Oof, that's rough.
But so some of the things that kind of make people, I think, care too much about their characters is, you know, paying money to commission character art or spending time. Okay.
I was going to clarify.
Yeah.
Do you think these are causes of people caring too much about their character or effectively the symptoms of people caring too much about your character? Because I think that's an important distinction.
Well, and it's hard. I think it's getting to be chicken and the egg now.
Okay.
I think I could have said maybe 20 years ago, I could have, you know, made that. That was much newer an idea and it wasn't such a standard thing. But for a lot of people, it's very standard. I can't draw, but I need art of this character. Okay. And you go on wherever you go for these things and DeviantArt or Tumblr or someplace and find an artist to do that. And then you have this, you know, image and you're like have this relationship. So you're caring about this thing that you've created because it's something, you know, it's a creative work of yours, even though it's just rolling dice to generate.
It's more than that. You also fill in bubbles if you're doing a PBTA playbook or picking cards sometimes. Yeah.
What kind of eyes do they have? But so things like that. So character art. And then also the now you can do there's platforms that let you do a miniature, create an exact miniature in 3D and have it printed.
Which is now belongs to that company if we're thinking about the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So now it's and there's a lot of that involved. And I guess, you know, just like, you know, buying special dice and dice towers and things, it gives you more ways to participate in the hobby. But as you are more connected to your character, you can't let bad things happen to them. And I think that it's going to affect how people play and also how people react when things do go wrong, because you're rolling dice and there's a lot of randomness. And if things go randomly bad for long enough, you could be.
I have not commissioned character art.
Mm-hmm.
I have purchased custom dice. Well, I mean, like custom in the sense that they were just kind of a particular color.
Right.
I've also written fiction.
Oh, right.
Which is kind of the same thing.
Right.
But you're right. I think there's a little bit of the chicken and the egg, and maybe it's hard to separate. I also think one of the causes might be just not marketing, but the additional businesses of making custom dice, illustrating people's characters, you know, producing dice towers, kind of all the ancillary stuff, people realizing there is a market for that.
Right.
And so that getting kind of promoted. And I'm not saying that's bad or good, but just this growth of a secondary market, encouraging people to partake in that kind of thing. But yeah, I think it is kind of a chicken and the egg because it's not going to affect some people.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to affect other people differently. You know, like they are going to get really attached to their character and they'll be really irritated when something bad happens to that character. But it's going to sound cheesy. This is a conversation that needs to happen in like a session zero, right?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And like, what are you expecting from the game? Mm-hmm. What kind of things are okay to happen to your character or not? Or like, are we doing a highly lethal game? Like, is this a, what they call a funnel, right? Mm-hmm. Are you going to start up with five characters we've rolled randomly and one is maybe is going to make it through the end of this meat grinder mission.
Right.
And that's the character you're going to play, which in some games can be really fun. Mm-hmm. Like, or in a game like Fate or Cortex, are we going to like build this character with a lot of, not bells and whistles, but a lot of like personal input?
Right.
I'm just going to feel real crappy if something bad happens to him that first session, you know? So kind of let's make sure it doesn't. Like, that's a discussion that needs to happen, which will then affect how attached people get to their characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think a lot of old school, that's, I mean, deadly games, you know, are kind of the style and expecting character death. And more recently, you know, there's some games, you know, like Tales from the Loop and things, you can't.
Death is off the table.
Yeah, right, yeah. It's just not an option. So you can just be taken out of the game. You can be very ineffective in the game, but you aren't going to be dead. Yeah, so like you mentioned, the player funnel, I think, so Dungeon Crawl Classics.
It's a character funnel.
Yeah.
I'll just say that up front. I do not want to play in any game that has a player funnel.
Yeah, PC funnel.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
So, yeah, so you just, you do like four level zero characters and take them into a dungeon and just let fate decide.
It's a meat grinder.
Yeah. And I think that has that's good because you'll end up with an unexpected result and you'll kind of move forward with something that was less than ideal instead of saying, I need my, tiefling, rogue, whatever to, be this perfect thing that I've imagined. Yeah. And I don't know.
I was going to say, I think both of those are fine. Mm-hmm. Where you run into problems is, you kind of mentioned in the intro, how much backstory a character has. Because playing D&D 3.5 years ago, coming with a couple characters and writing like a page and a half worth of backstory. Mm-hmm. And then in hindsight, looking at that now, on the one hand, if you give the GM or DM hooks within that character backstory, that's great for the DM because it's less work that they have to do. Mm-hmm. But depending on the number of people in the or players in the game, that could be a lot of material for them to read through and to pull from, and people are going to possibly get left out or just kind of feels overwhelming. I forget where I saw it. Well, I guess the other problem is the mechanics of your character might not line up with the background you've written for them, by how the way the game works.
Yes.
You know, everyone kind of, I think, not everyone, lots of people probably started off with, playing D&D and imagining this heroic character then starting at level 2 and you can't really do anything and you get poked by a sharp stick and die, right? So that's the other kind of disconnect. But I've recently come around to the idea that anything that happened to your character in backstory, that's not what the game's about.
That happened.
Sure, we can say that happened. The game is about your character's future or present or now.
Right.
So write as much or as little as you want to get a handle on playing that character, and let's find out what happens to them rather than explore what happened to them.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's a good point. You hear a lot of actors talking about that too. Like, some actors really want to like figure out like, where their character went to elementary school and if their parents got divorced and, all of these things, because it helps them react. It helps them like, give a full kind of reaction or more complete in the thinking of the character. But it shouldn't, it can intrude on the game.
Right.
It should just be something that's informing maybe your role playing and
The choices your character makes.
Right.
But
yeah,
going forward.
Yes, right. And so so I think that could be useful, but not necessarily. And like you said, the hooks, though, I think that's a nice thing, because I think that important thing is the session zero, the kind of like buy-in of all of the players to like, this is the world we're playing in. It's a shared experience. Mm. Okay, there aren't going to be, elf pirates in this one, but, So, just kind of decide what's in and what's out and what people want to do. And that leads me to something that I found online called the Same Page Tool.
Okay.
Which is something that you could use. So it's kind of a checklist. It's something you could use in a session zero if you haven't done that before, or you just want to kind of get an idea of what are good guidelines to get everybody on the same page. And so there are questions on that, like, do you play to win?
Mm.
Our player characters are, you know, expected to work together, but major conflicts may erupt, and never see reconciliation.
Ooh.
Like, yeah. So different degrees of like what you're expecting. The GM's role is to, you know, prep events, to prepare maps, like what exactly do you want to see the GM through? And so it just talks about roles. And so those are kind of the basic things. If you've played together before or have some role play experience, this might be a little bit too basic. It might be going a little bit too deep, but I think it's good, especially if there's strangers at the table. If it's like a new group, this might be a good way to get a baseline about, oh, you guys don't use miniatures? Oh,
right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was expecting something more character-based, but something more player-based with expectations is probably more important, because it ain't the character playing the game, right? It's the player playing the game, and so player expectations and what you expect from the game and to kind of see on the table and be included is much more important. Yeah,
and I think that the best experience I've had so far is that collaborative world building from a session zero. I think that really made a satisfying world that everyone was like already a little bit invested in. So not necessarily their character that they cared so much about, but they wanted to see how this was going to turn out, like how these forces that are set against each other are going to actually meet.
Yeah, so they got to include interesting bits.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think it's the longer you play a character, kind of getting back to the topic, the longer you play a character, I think it's kind of natural to have an attachment to them, unless you're playing an absolute monster.
Yeah, right.
Right? And if you have an attachment to them, I think you maybe need to go to therapy. But, I mean, quite broad statement, you probably don't, but whatever. But I think it's just something that's naturally going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you go through, or the more you have your character go through, maybe, you know, the stronger the attachment to that character is going to get. So especially, how am I trying to phrase this? Like, if something pretty bad happens to your character, like getting tossed in jail or end up dying or something like that, or some kind of irrevocable change, especially if you didn't initiate that, like if it was the result of a die roll or something like that, I can understand why that's upsetting. And I said, especially if you didn't initiate that, because I'm thinking of Fate, where one of the real big changes you can do is if you're taking a boatload of stress, you can change the high concept of your character to reflect that stress. But that's something the player has to choose to do. But if, I guess, on if you're making a die roll, presumably there were steps prior to that die roll that you, the player, made to get the character into that situation.
Right.
So it's not completely up to chance, but that die roll still does sometimes feel unsatisfying, because once the die leaves your hand or whatever your randomizer you're using, you have no control over it, because it's a randomizer. So that can feel kind of hollow, especially if it's framed as your character sucking.
Yeah,
rather than something happening to your character beyond their control.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, I think it's something important to consider and talk about, and also, you know, be aware as a DM, like how characters are going to react. I mean, just kind of be.
You mean player?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. How players are going to react to character death. Sorry. because that's a good thing to. It's possible. So, you know, you're talking about what's going to happen in the game. And yeah, this is possible. You could die. So let's be ready for that. And we're going to tell a good story that may end fatally.
Or alternatively, it's like, wow, okay, I didn't read the room.
Mm-hmm.
People are real unhappy. The players are real unhappy. So this is a game. Let's undo what made everybody happy, because it ain't real life, and we can just magically hit a rewind button and do something that everyone at the table is going to be much more comfortable with.
Right.
I mean, some people may argue that'll break immersion or whatever. Mm. And I do understand that some players are going to be more like, well, no, we got to the point, we rolled the die. That happened, and this has come up so many times in like dice fudging arguments, never go away. And my point always was, if the player is expressly unhappy with what happened, just undo it.
Yeah, if it's going to ruin the group, it's going to break. Yeah, yeah.
If you just didn't like the roll, the roll stands, right? Like, do you want to stop playing?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, do you, the player, want to stop playing because of what happened? And if that answer is yes, then maybe let's undo that. If you're just like, oh, that really sucked,
Right.
Okay, let's keep going.
Yeah, and a lot of the OSR games are built to kind of, you know, you can just put another character, you can roll another character up and have them, you know, in the next session or even coming, you know, coming up a little bit later.
After. Or promote a hireling that's been in the background until just now, right?
I have some experience with that. Yeah, I started off as an NPC, converted NPCs. So, and that's good to have, like, if you do have the kind of group of hirelings, then you've got people that you at least know their names, you know their classes.
Do you? Or do you just know them as a bag of hit points to, like, is that a door or a sphere of oblivion? Go find out. Yeah.
But there's a lot of ways to approach it. But I think player expectations are important. And not to make people miserable. And you really never know how people are going to react.
No, you don't.
Yeah, yeah. Because especially if you've been doing things over a long amount of time. Yeah, I heard on one of the kind of AP podcasts, I heard a really amazing kind of depiction. And the player themselves were stubbornly... You know, this is very dangerous. This is very fair. I'm doing this. Okay. I'm doing this. So they were definitely going to accept the death. And then the way that the DM narrated it was amazing. It was like he tried to give it a heroic and a really amazing ending. And the player at the table was like, yeah, let's do this.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so it can be an interesting and kind of satisfying event. It doesn't always have to be like, oh, no.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here's a blank character sheet.
Okay. Well, let me just like slide these custom dice out of here. Won't need that figure anymore.
Everything was dwarf based.
Can I get a refund on that art I commissioned? Right. Yeah, that kind of thing. But like, again, bringing back to it, like if you do that, that will increase your attachment to the character, I think. Or it will, there's more chance for disappointment or more of a sting if you stop telling a story with that character for whatever reason.
Right. Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, it definitely has to be something that's agreed upon ahead of time, because I think that is part of the risk. And if the characters, if they don't feel like they're in danger, then you're just going to kind of blunder through the decisions you're going to make, or even like your strategies for combat are going to be ridiculous, because you're like, yeah, the DM, I can talk him out of it. If I end up full of arrows and, you know, bleeding out, I can talk him out of it. You don't want to lessen the kind of
consequences.
Yeah, consequences and kind of the danger of the stakes of of the game, because that's part of the fun. It's like, oh, whoa, I'm getting low, no more potions.
Well, I think that's possibly a better way of putting it, because like, yeah, combat is one of the things, and whoa, running low on hit points, right? that's the classic. But kind of the more, how can I say it, I guess the less combat focused one, then it's more stakes and consequences and whoa, I was not expecting the outcome of my character, or my character was not expecting the outcome of their actions to be so wide-ranging or have such huge fallout, which doesn't necessarily result in death. It means the loss of friendships or stuff like that. So yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be risk, but there has to be consequence to the action. Otherwise, why are you doing it?
You're just rolling dice and
I will just play Monopoly.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to role play the shoe.
So something to consider. And I'll put a link up to the same page. Yeah. Okay, good. So same page tool, if you want to take a look at that. And just kind of, that's a good kind of baseline.
I think that is
what people are thinking about.
I'm sure there are other tools. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but that's a really good tool, especially as you said, if there are new people getting together to kind of set expectations of what the game is going to be like, or what the various players expect or are hoping to get out of the experience of playing.
Right. Yeah, that's good. But you know what is worse than character death? World death.
Oh, really? Okay.
So Games Workshop, what is that? Like, it's been more than 5 years ago now, killed the old world
of
Warhammer Fantasy. So on the table before us, we have the reincarnation. And I don't know. I mean, I think there are people so stubbornly refusing to kind of step into their new legally more viable,
distinct world.
Legally distinct world, that they're already talking about reviving the old world in like a Forge world type, you know, super.
I thought they had already done that, but I don't. They super follow.
Yeah, they're saying it's years from now, and they showed some sketches and things, and it looks a little fancier. It looks a little more like Age of Sigmar. Like they can't give up this kind of embellishing thing. So this looks.
But that's always been GW's setting, right?
Yeah,
I mean, put more skulls on it is the joke for everything. So you can't have non-fancy stuff.
But that was the kind of the nice thing about fantasy, and probably why it stopped selling, is because it was more stripped down, plain fantasy. Yeah, just kind of ugly and plain. And it was just dwarves and elves. And and now it's sea elves and flying dwarves. And so we have Soulbound here, the RPG. So the Cubicle 7 RPG for the Age of Sigmar. And what's funny is Cubicle 7 also got the Old World Warhammer Fantasy license.
Oh, really?
So they did 4th edition. So there's exactly the same, you know, style of core rulebook for 4th edition Warhammer Fantasy. But then they also, because they have Warhammer everything, they also did an Age of Sigmar.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so, yeah, so this is a little bit unique because you don't separate kind of race and class or kind of species or,
no,
or
you don't.
Kin and class. Yeah, they're really bound together. So you're playing a type of character. But it also seems like they do tie it, because there is a miniatures game. So this is the second edition rulebook for the miniatures game. They do tie it more to miniatures because you can play very specifically with having terrain features and things that have effect in combat and proximity to certain things, just like the miniatures game.
Yeah, as GW is a miniatures game.
Right.
I would expect something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So, so hopefully we'll get a chance to play one of
anything.
These. One of these. Yeah, because I'm curious to see how it does play and if it feels, because it is very
heroic.
Yeah, very heroic fantasy. Yeah, yeah. Because the especially the
Soulforge
characters. Yeah, yeah.
I keep interrupting.
No, it's fine. That's fine. The way the Stormcast Eternals are just reforged constantly, and when they first did Age of Sigmar, the lore was kind of a mess and very indistinct. And so I was really, because we never saw anyone's face, no helmets never came off. I'm like, is this animated armor?
Yeah, yeah,
is it souls inside armor? That's a great concept. Nope.
It's not that?
They immediately took their helmets off. I mean, they are.
They
are distinct and they have flesh and blood. And the lore's gotten better as far as like when they're reforged, they lose their memories. They're like, you know, they're weakened their connection to the old world, you know, whatever they came from, whatever they're forged from, those souls are being weakened.
Right.
But they immediately took their helmets off and had to be characters and things. And I like the fact that it was, because that's bizarre. That's really bizarre to have just a force of golden armor, you know,
that
animated
cool,
by
yeah.
souls. But yeah, so.
Miniatures wise, I heard people complaining that was kind of indistinct. And it was difficult to tell what the different units were,
whether they're
all just gold-clad dudes.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think the same. And people immediately complained, this is just Fantasy Space Marines, because the armor.
It was anyway.
It kind of was. And so we'll see. And I'm curious to adventure in this world. It's very complicated. And the actual setting in the miniatures game does not go into anything even close to being
able
to handle a role-playing game. It's not granular enough, whereas what they did in Soulbound was give you, this is what towns are like. Merchants are like. This is what food is like. And where you had, you know, basically no idea because you can't go on those assumptions of, you know, old world Warhammer fantasy because that doesn't exist. So these are new realms and new ways, and each is kind of based on an element. So,
cool.
Yeah, very different.
What do they eat in Fire World? Oh, fire.
It's mostly barbecue. But it's, so hopefully we'll get around to these someday. I have plenty of miniatures.
Yeah.
So we can definitely be at that. So that is it for this week. Where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, Hivemind, HYVEMYND, where I think, yelling about parenting stuff.
Oh, nice. All right. And if you'd like to find more of the weekly, we have a YouTube channel. So Idle Red Hands on YouTube and Twitch. We do some occasional live streaming. And the podcast is available on your favorite podcast platform. And you can see all of that at idleredhands.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back again.
Later, mortals.
Bye.